Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends, I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Apple and Tesla led the market today, Dow gaining 146 points, S&P advancing 0.32%, NASDAQ climbing 0.35%. The averages, frankly, they were almost a sideshow to these two stocks, and each had a very different story to tell, both incredibly instructive about what can make a stock go higher in this dynamic market. Now, you wouldn't expect the overall market to be this benign coming into the biggest earnings week of the year, with a worrisome Fed meeting, worrisome labor report at the end of the week, but the trajectory of these two stocks, both incredibly weak for the year, has nothing to do with the Fed or the employment report anyway. So how did Apple stock rally 2.5%? Tesla stock roar 15%? What happened? Right, I've been saying that Tesla stock would keep going down unless and until Elon Musk pulled a rabbit out of a hat. He wasn't able to find that rabbit in time for the quarter, but he bagged a terrific one this weekend when he got permission to sell a subscription-based derivative of full self-driving for the Tesla in China, which gives him a whole new revenue stream, a big one. That can go a long way to restore price momentum after vicious price cutting in China. Just as important as how Musk got it. He made a surprise trip to China, met with Premier Li, and nailed down a deal with Baidu, the Google of China, that allows us to have the best maps available. This is unbelievable. And it's also a perfect example of a CEO redefining the narrative. There have been a feeling that Musk had gotten so, I don't know, they had so much going on that he hadn't been paying attention to Tesla. Now, here he is doing something no American CEO can do. Just get on a plane and make a deal with the leader of a country that our government isn't particularly fond of. I can't think of anything similar in the annals of American business, except maybe when Arm & Hammer went to the Soviet Union during the Russian Civil War and became Lenin's chosen capitalist. At the time, there were U.S. troops in Russia fighting against the communists, and this guy still made a fortune negotiating with Lenin. Of course, I don't put Xi Jinping in the same category as Lenin, but he's still much more, he's a little more friendly. Ha! But Hammer's the only other executive I can remember who could make a surprise trip to a hostile country and come back with an extremely lucrative deal. That said, it's not a magical elixir for Tesla. It's not full self-drive, and competition remains stiff. But let's face it, no one else can pull this off, which is why shareholders love the guy and bid the stock up so much, making fools of last week's downgraders. It's almost as if that Musk had leverage over the regime. Hey, maybe he does. Maybe they're just as dazzled by him as everyone else. Either way, it's out of... made people a lot of money. Will Tesla move, the move, have staying power? Look, plenty of people shorted the stock, betting that they could finally break the darn thing. They failed. The stock can keep running until the shorts are all crushed. All right, different story, Apple. Now, I'm not a fan of what went into today's rally. See, today, Tony Saganegi from Bernstein, famous analyst on TV a lot, upgraded Apple to a buy with a piece called Buy the Fear, Upgrading to Outperform. Apple has derated significantly, says, amid a weak iPhone cycle and fears that Apple's China business is structurally impaired. Saganegi believes that the expectations have finally gotten so low that it can work. Stocks underperformed the S&P by 19% year to date. On top of that, he points out, quote, Apple is entering a seasonally strong trading period. The stock has outperformed in the 3 months leading into the iPhone launch in 15 of the last 17 years by an average of 1,280 basis points, end quote. That is huge. And he doesn't believe the China problem is existential. He thinks it's normal cyclicality. Now, Saganegi believes that because the stock's less expensive than it's been, it's now worth buying. You know what he's doing? He's urging investors to be like Buffett, whose well-attended annual meeting is coming up Saturday. As Tony says, quote, despite his reputation as a long-term buy-and-hold investor, Warren Buffett has been remarkably disciplined about adding to his Apple position when it is relatively cheap and trimming it when it's relatively expensive, end quote. Even as this quarter likely won't be good and the guidance will be weak, Tony believes Apple can sustain 4 to 5% revenue growth, and that could translate to 8 to 10% earnings growth. Everyone who watches this show knows one thing. I believe in owning, not trading Apple. It's been my view for at least 20 years now. But Tony's an Apple skeptic. Get this. In February of 2018, he downgraded the stock because he thought Apple's growth would slow dramatically thanks to weak iPhone sales. He also cut his price target from $195 to $170. Now, I know, you might think that's not that bad given that Apple's now at $173, but au contraire, there's just one problem. Since Tony's 2018 downgrade, the stock's had a 4-for-1 split. If you adjust the split, Tony downgraded Apple at $40.03. In retrospect, that was not a Buffett-like call. Now, anyone can spoof any analyst bringing up this stuff. You can spoof me, too, and people do all the time if you go over every pick. No one in this industry is right all the time. Nobody even comes close, including Tony. Tony Saganay is a very smart guy, so I'm not trying to put him down. The bigger issue is that I think of him as the leader of the Apple's best days are behind it contingent, the one that has always the most critical questions, negative questions, one who's arguably done the most work, frankly, to keep you out of the stock, but it's really in a de facto sort of way. I think he's playing this thing just... He's playing the whole negativity brilliant. Never really attacking thing, never really attacking Tim. Always, that's Tim Cook, the CEO. Always damning it with what I call faint praise, never blasting Apple, yet being incredibly effective at making you dislike the company's shares. Even worse, Tony's a genuinely great analyst. His work on earnings is among the best. He knows numbers like no other. He may be the best there is in that department, the GOAT of estimates. If we were talking about any other stock, too, you know, I got to take him pretty seriously. But when it comes to picking Apple's stock price and where it's going, his direction work is suboptimal. And for shareholders, the direction of the stock is more important than the sales and earnings. Or as I might have said in a moment, more fiery moment of the old days, quote, the direction is all that matters. And he's gotten that wrong 9 ways to Sunday. And now, here's what I am most worried about. It's natural to be a little superstitious here. If this guy downgraded Apple from $40 and he missed the move from $40 to $175, I actually don't care what his numbers are. I don't care about his iPhone estimates or his service revenue projections. I just know that if this guy, when he finally climbs on the bandwagon, it's now, well, it feels a bit suspect. If someone who got the price wrong for 6 years is now all over it, it makes me worry that there is, alas, some sort of jinx. Unlike Tony, I want you to own Apple, not trade it, even as I suspect this quarter will be weak and the next quarter will be worse. But I am with him that you should buy the stock. I just think you need to wait it out, because now you got a sagging spike on top of what could be a bad quarter. That's not what I want as someone who owns the stock for the Chapel Trust. I wish he'd waited. Here's the bottom line. Today, Tesla rallied some genuinely transformational news brought to you by the incredible leadership of Elon Musk. But Apple rallied on an upgrade from an analyst who historically does not have a great understanding of this particular stock. That's a much less inspiring kind of rally with no staying power to speak of. Carrie in New Mexico. Carrie.
Hey, Jim. Booyah, Jim Cramer.
Booyah, Carrie.
Long-time listener, second-time caller.
Excellent.
Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
I'm just want to know what your take is on Morgan Stanley as an investment.
We own Morgan Stanley for the trust. I wish it had been up more. Goldman Sachs is doing, my alma mater is doing better than Morgan Stanley. I like the last quarter, but the stock seems to have stalled out again. It's very, very inexpensive, so I'm not going to trade it. I just wish I had bought Goldman. Jeremy in California. Jeremy.
Jimmy Chill. First time, long time. Booyah.
Great to have you on the show. What's going on?
The guys in the Mad Money group chat and I, which is just a text thread that you've inspired us to talk all things stocks on, we're increasingly leaning towards Google reviews over Yelp. And given Google's dominance in search, do you think Yelp has a realistic chance at competing with Google in the long run?
You know, it can. It has a niche. And I've got to tell you, it's been around forever. I'm surprised someone hasn't picked it off. I guess they like to be independent. But it's down 13%. And I don't think it's, you know, look, it's hard for me to say no, don't own it. Because the next thing you know, Stopman might just say, I'm going to sell the thing. And then it makes me look bad. So I'm just going to say, I don't really like it. How's that? Let's go to Keith in my home state of Pennsylvania. Keith.
Hey, Mr. Cramer, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Hey, I got a... say thank you to you and your team. You guys and your advice have helped us pay off the mortgage on our house, and we love you guys for it because we listen to your advice and we really take it to heart. So I have a stock I'd like to talk to you about.
Sure,
here, and
thank
get
you.
Your input
thank
on
you.
It.
Sure. Well, how can I help?
So I have a question on Shopify. it's been really lagging since March, and I just want to know, going into earnings, if now is a good time to get in since it's really low, or what your opinion is on that.
I know it's down 7% for the year. I would buy a little before and a little after. I mean, you have to May 8th to make the move, but I think Shopify is doing incredibly well. It's had a big run. I think it can continue, and I like the company very much. All right, today brought us two very different kinds of rallies. Tesla, some genuinely transformational news, and Apple, an upgrade from an analyst who has not nailed the stock before. That's, look at the way I put that, huh? That kind of rally is unfortunately a lot. They're very not inspiring. On Mad Money Tonight, as I said last week, with earnings rolling on, we're starting to see some brown shoots in this economy that you can't ignore. So where should you go to get a broader read on where we stand? Look no further than the rails. I'm seeing what the big four are telling us about the strength of our economy and the country as a whole. Then, in a market like this, I'm always trying to find some under-the-radar stories that could be a winner for your portfolio. Tonight, I am unveiling an industrial conglomerate that's been quietly creeping higher that I really like. And ResMed stock was initially beaten down by the sales of GLP-1s. So are the drugs a tailwind or a headwind for the company? I'm getting the latest from the CEO, so stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The busiest week of earnings season is upon us. We're seeing brown shoots, signs of economic weakness all over the place. So in this kind of environment, what do we do with the railroads?
All aboard!
We know the truckers are struggling here, but could the rails be different? Because this is an important group for the broader economy. I want to take them one at a time, with Norfolk Southern, Union Pacific, Canadian Pacific, Kansas City. Remember, that's a combination CanPac and Kansas City U. And CSX. Now, we're starting with Norfolk Southern. That's the most controversial, the East Coast Railroad, because at the end of January, I told you the company's performing suboptimally. But the stock might be ready to bottom because it barely got hit on a disappointing quarter. I also said it might be a good place for an activist to target. Sure enough, later that same night, the Wall Street Journal reported that Ancora Holdings had taken a stake in Norfolk Southern and planned to launch a proxy fight to put its own slate of directors on the board. The activists at Ancora wanted the company to embrace precision scheduled railroading, something every major player in the industry has already adopted because it offers a massive efficiency boost, as we saw from Union Pacific last week. Norfolk Southern's management doesn't want to go there, though. They say it'll hurt reliability. My view. Look, Norfolk Southern pre-announced the downside earlier this month, and then last Wednesday they reported a quarter that still managed to fall short of those lowered expectations. When you look under the hood, the numbers are not good. Total revenue is down 4%, a 10% decline in coal, 8% decline in intermodal. Costs were elevated, although management said to expect margin improvement in the second half of the year. I like CEO Alan Shaw, who was on earlier this evening, but I think both sides have compelling arguments in this fight. Do you know what? Just this morning, the influential proxy advisory firm Glass Lewis sided mostly with the dissidents, recommending Ancora's slate of board nominees. The vote comes next week. I prefer Precision Railroading, which to me then cuts against Norfolk Southern. But look, they have their reasons, and I definitely am not a railroad man. However, I am someone who knows what drives up earnings and stocks. Next up, back in January, I told you that West Coast-focused Union Pacific was my favorite player in this group. And hey, they reported arguably the best quarter of any railroad last Thursday morning, which sent the stock up almost 5% in a single session. So they've got this new CEO, Jim Venn. He's clearly doing a good job. He's a Precision Railroad guy. Going cargo by cargo, mixed bag. Industrial freight revenues up 4%, bulk freight down 4%, automotive up 4%, intermodal down 6%. However, Union Pacific did a much better job of holding down costs than anyone expected, which allowed them to deliver a sizable earnings beat. While the company only gives qualitative guidance, not a set of numbers, they said their profitability outlook is gaining momentum. I'll give you this. Even as there are some areas of softness, like intermodal and this coal again, management also promised to resume its buyback in the current quarter. That's sweet. Look, I think it was a good, solid result for Union Pacific. And although the stock popped last Thursday, it's still down slightly year to date. With it trades at just over 21 times earnings. I think it could expand. It's my favorite in the group still. All right, how about my second favorite? Back in January, I said it was Canadian Pacific Kansas City, formed from the old merger of both CanPac and Kansas City Southern. Now, they've now got a great business bringing cargoes north from Mexico, autos in particular. Unfortunately, when these guys reported last Wednesday that the market didn't like it, stock tumbled more than 6%. I thought the numbers were decent, not that great, not that bad. Carloads were down 3% year over year on a combined basis, but pricing increased 5%, more than making up for it. Strong performance for U.S. grain, partially offset by Canadian grain crop. Interestingly, Canadian Pacific had some of the best intermodal numbers out there. They were weak for a bunch of others, driven by cargoes coming from the ports of Vancouver and Lazaro Cardenas, which is the largest port in Mexico. Again, that's why I like this one so much. Meanwhile, on the cost front, Canadian Pacific's numbers were basically in line. They've made some huge progress in Mexico. Remember, that's my big focus. Car miles per day were up 23%. Active cars online decreased by 15%, but it's Precision Railroading. Most important, Canadian Pacific reiterated its full-year outlook for double-digit earnings growth. While the market didn't like this one, I think CanPac was a victim of high expectations. Its shares were up 11% for the year going into the quarter, making it the best performer of the group's up by far. In fact, even after last week's sell-off, stock still sells the best-performing railroad in 2024. I think Canadian Pacific's pullback is a viable pullback. I really like it here. Finally, there's one that is just, oh, God, I'm on the fence. It's CSX. I know it's the worst-performing major railroad this year, but it's only down 2%. While CSX is a better operator than the other big East Coast railroad, Norfolk Southern, that's maybe not saying that much. And unlike Norfolk Southern, there's no activist campaign to turn things around. Now, when CSX reported back on April 17th, the numbers were indeed uninspiring. They had a 3% volume increase, offset by a 4% decline in revenue per unit, which is the opposite of the rest of the industry. Chemical and automotive revenues, they were up high single digits, very strong. Coal was flat. Trucking and others were down. While the earnings per share came in better than expected and CSX reiterated its full-year forecast, the stock got dinged anyway because the first quarter results were still not so hot. Overall, I think CSX is fine, but I can't give you a reason to own this one right now. Even Norfolk Southern, a worse company, has a better stock thanks to the activist campaign. Finally, let's not forget about a private one, or at least one that's wholly owned subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway, and that's Burlington Northern. Now, we don't have the numbers yet for the first quarter, as Berkshire doesn't report until this upcoming weekend. But we do have the full-year results for 2023, and they were not good. They were actually not good at all. Volume declines across the board, 8% decline for consumer products and most important cargo. Costs are going in the wrong direction, too. I can't believe Warren Buffett will tolerate that kind of performance. We'll find out when our own Becky Quick travels to Omaha at the end of the week, boots on the ground Friday, and then, of course, for Saturday's meeting. This is the company I'm actually most interested in hearing Buffett talk about. He didn't talk about it much at all last year. I'm honestly not sure what to make of Burlington Northern. I think maybe they're losing market share to Union Pacific, Canadian Pacific. So putting it all together, things have certainly gotten incrementally worse for the railroad since the last time we checked in on them 3 months ago. That's the brown shoots talking. Still, it doesn't mean the stocks can't work. Norfolk Southern's roared because an activist firm by finally forcing them to adopt this precision railroading that I like so much? That would make it a great self-help story if the activists win next week's proxy contest. But apart from the one-off situation, the bottom line is my views on this group haven't changed after we've seen the quarters. I like Union Pacific the best, followed by Canadian Pacific Kansas City, with CSX in third. Ironically, the weaker the economy gets, the more likely it is that the Fed will cut rates. And then the railroads get that boost that we all want them to have. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, a deep dive into an industrial on the move. All you need to know about this stock to watch next.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Last week, the stock of Dover came out of nowhere. Reported a spectacular quarter here. Now, this is a company I used to follow really closely back in the day. But I thought it was a sleepy industrial conglomerate, textbook metal bender, hey, especially in elevators. But in recent years, Dover's reinvented itself the way I love a company to do, embracing clean energy and engineered products for the data center, aerospace, even biopharma. It's a smokestack stock that turned itself into something a lot more modern. And people got to finally start realizing this, because that's one of the reasons why the stock's now rallied 41% from its lows last October, and I don't think it's done. After struggling by leave for most of 2022 and 2023, Dover's come roaring back. It's reminding me of the Dover of old, actually, a dividend aristocrat with a stock that's quietly and consistently outperforming the S&P 500. So how did Dover get its groove back? Well, first, after a string of seemingly disappointing quarters, the company reported a solid set of results back at the beginning of February. While Dover missed expectations for organic revenue growth by more than 3 percentage points, they managed to deliver a meaningful earnings beat. However, management's full-year forecast seemed pretty lackluster. Revenue growth worse than expected. Earnings guidance worse than expected. You'd think that this was truly dispiriting. But because Dover was coming off a string of not-so-hot quarters, Wall Street took these numbers in stride. You know what they did? Investors focused on the fact that Dover's orders, there's an interesting metric, right? Orders had turned positive for the first time since the fourth quarter of 2021. That alone was enough for people to overlook the mixed results in the conservative full-year forecast. When the orders start turning around, generally everything else follows. That's what you want. Which brings me to last Thursday, when Dover reported its first quarter, and this time there was nothing mixed about the results. First, Dover's order growth, the hero of the previous quarter, actually accelerated again. Order growth was up 8.5%. That's tech. That's how good that is. That's like tech. While organic revenue growth remained negative, okay, it was only down 1.3%, much better than the down 3.6% decline that Wall Street was looking for. And total revenue was up 1%. Okay, first positive revenue growth in ages. That's how you look at it. On top of that, Dover posted an 8-cent earnings beat off a $1.87 basis, even though management only reiterated their full-year forecast. They did slightly raise the low end of their earnings outlook by 5 cents, which is better than nothing. Long story short, the numbers are finally headed in the right direction. People want to own this stock, as Dover CEO Richard Tobin put it, and I'm going to quote here. We are particularly pleased with the success of our organic growth platforms, as well as the order trends in the quarter, which validate the aggressive working capital posture we adopted in 2023, end quote. He went on to say, order momentum in the quarter was strong and broad-based, particularly in our shorter cycle end markets, building off the prior year exit rate and bolstering confidence in our full-year outlook, end quote. He then called out a string of some really strong growth in several key markets, improving performance in Dover's biopharma components business. It kind of felt like when remember when I told you Danaher had turned, it kind of, or team, Thermo Fisher, it felt like that. It felt like Timo. So what's really happened here? But of course, what really matters is how it happened. How did they start putting up such strong numbers? I love this kind of growth. In large part, I think it's because Dover has transformed itself. After ignoring this one for a few years, the company now has built up some great exposure to the biggest themes of our era. When management called out the product categories where they're seeing the most momentum, it's a list of so many of the themes I constantly try to get in front of you. Dover's got strength in U.S. carbon dioxide systems, you know, reduce CO2. They had a big boost from the regulators who are driving a major transition toward natural refrigerants. They had great momentum in heat exchangers. Sound boring? Wait a second. Incredibly popular in data centers, which can't operate at peak performance unless they get rid of some of that excess heat from all the servers. They're doing terrific in thermal connectors. Again, that's data center. And in bio biopharma, which is we've seen from the other life science companies, is making a tremendous comeback. The best part, these are all high margin areas, not the low margin of old. When you look at Dover's five big reporting segments, four of them beat sales expectations. Only climate and sustainability technology came up short. How long is that going to stay bad? Engineered products, their largest segment, had 9.2% organic growth. That was far above what Wall Street was looking for. On the conference call, management said that strong volumes in waste handling and aerospace and defense drove that result. Also caught up bookings growth in the vehicle services business. Another standout, pumps and process solutions. Hey, did you see pumps for Carrier? Carrier is up again today. Listen to these guys at Dover. They had 4.5% organic growth in this area. Also substantially better than expected. When you want to get into down here, there, Dover explained the strength was driven by, quote, robust volumes in precision components and polymer processing, end quote. Hey, this pumps and process solutions division is also the one that's benefiting from turn in the life sciences industry, just like we saw when Danaher reported. Now, historically, when Dover's at its best, it's pretty active about managing its portfolio, basically divesting non-core businesses with less attractive growth prospects while doing bolt-on acquisitions to expand into more attractive areas. While Dover never really abandoned those efforts, they certainly got de-emphasized over the course of 2022 and 2023 when the company was struggling with busted sales, supply chain, spotty end markets. You couldn't really see how good it was doing. But Dover's finally back in the swing of portfolio management. Company recently sold off DESTACO. That's one of their engineered products businesses that sells industrial automation components. The sale price represented an enterprise value of $680 million. Then Dover turned around and made two bolt-on acquisitions for its clean energy and fueling division. What did I tell you? Broad themes. By the way, and what can only be viewed as a big sign of confidence, Dover also announced a launch of $500 million accelerated buyback. That's significant when a company with a market capitalization of just under $25 billion, and it contributed to that nice earnings beat. The largest bottom line beat for Dover on a percentage basis since the fourth quarter of 2021. In the end, it is tough to say that Dover ever really went away, but the stock did fall off our radar screen, a bit at least, as the company muddled through a complicated operating environment in 2022 and 2023. Oh, I know. I wish I'd circle back sooner. I wish so many stocks I got them earlier. You can't get everything right. But as the stock started recovering in October, months before we got any signs that the core business was turning around, I just didn't spot it. That said, you know what? For all of this sturm and drang, I don't think you're too late. This Dover comeback story's got legs. We've had a couple of quarters of positive order growth. Organic revenue growth remains negative. That can change. I bet Dover can absolutely continue to put up strong numbers going forward, which is why I like this stock, which is currently trading at just under 20 times earnings. That's the midpoint of their full-year earnings forecast. So listen to me. Bottom line, after a fresh look at Dover, I am thrilled to see that it's no longer an old-fashioned smokestack stock. It's reinvented itself. The new Dover has tons of exposure to clean energy, rapid growth of the data center, even the life sciences business, a trio of great things to be levered to. These are areas that can all keep doing fine, even in the face of a slower economy. And that's why I bet this stock can continue to rally. Bright themes will travel. Let's take calls. I'm telling you, it's going higher. Let's take calls. Let's go to Dan in Ohio. Dan.
Good evening, Jim. How are you?
Dan, I am flying. Well, how about you, partner?
If I was any better, there'd be two of me.
Well, I like that. I may have to adopt that. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Sherwin-Williams, considering selling it, what are your thoughts?
I didn't like the last quarter. I do feel that the read-through from Lowe's and from Home Depot is not so good. I agree with you. I think I would hit the exit button, and you've got a good game most likely, and I'd take it. Let's go to Larry in Idaho. Larry.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you, Larry?
I have a question for you regarding Archer Aviation. I purchased 160 shares at 352 on June 9th, 2023, and that's when you advised to buy it.
Well, I don't like Archer Aviation. It loses money, and I don't like the electric. I do not like the vertical takeoff market, unless it's for defense purposes, so I would exit that one. Let's go to Ed in Illinois. Ed.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill, club member and your number one disciple.
Holy cow, I'm proud to have you, and I thank you for those kind words. How can I help?
We need your help.
This sure,
stock
I'm there.
Has traded sideways since 2021. Can it be an infrastructure or AI play? Jim, is John Deere ticker DE a good long-term investment now?
Okay, Deere does have some AI. We know that. AGCO, I think, actually has equal. I happen to like Deere, the company, very, very much. I will say this, though. If you want to be levered to infrastructure, it's not a good play. It's far more levered to ag, which is slowing down. But no one ever made a mistake buying Deere, even in the heart of the actual great crash of 1987. It was the stock to buy, believe it or not. Right. The new Dover has tons of what can really keep doing well in the face of a slower economy, and that's what we're looking for. I think DOV can continue to rally. Right themes, right market, right stock. Now, we have so much mad money, including my Susan with ResMed. Stocks rebounding from its lows. Could there be more room to run, or should investors remain cautious because of this GOP-1 thesis that has kept it down? I've got the CEO, and he's real smart. Then last week, we witnessed the quarter of a year when this big tech player reported. You know, I'm going to reveal the company and why it's actually, believe it or not, not too late to get involved. And Oyer calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Last Thursday night, we got this incredible set of results from ResMed, the medical device company that makes equipment for the treatment of sleep disorder, breathing. I want you to think sleep apnea. This stock had gotten obliterated from last August through last October, as Wall Street, of course, worried that the rise of these GLP-1 weight loss drugs would translate into less obesity, which is a major cause of sleep apnea. Turns out that was a tremendous buying opportunity. When ResMed reported last week, they delivered a 20-cent earnings beat off a $1.93 basis, strong revenue growth, and management actually laying out the case for how GLP-1 weight loss drugs might be good for their business. In response, the stock shot up nearly 90%. It was like he had a takeover bid here. So can he keep running? Let's check him in Big Farrell. He's the chairman and CEO of ResMed to get a better read on the quarter. Mr. Farrell, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, great to be back on the show with you. Just been 90 days, but what a 90 days, huh?
Oh, I tell you, Mick, this is really some quarter. Maybe you can walk people through how you were able to put this together, and then we'll deal with the GLP-1 issue.
Yeah, look, what the team has done, you know, there's 10,000 ResMedians selling in 140 countries. What they've done is what we've done as a company. It's our 35th birthday this year. We've done it for 35 years, 25 years public on the New York Stock Exchange, so 100 quarters. What we do is we drive growth. We help people sleep better, breathe better, and live better lives. And there's more than 1 billion people worldwide suffocating with sleep apnea, over 500 million with COPD, and 500 million with insomnia. And that's 2 billion people, one in four people on the planet. So our job is to help those people find a path to screening, diagnosis, better sleep, better breathing, and better care delivered in the home. And we executed these last 90 days. More patients came into the funnel. We took care of them. We took some costs out, frankly, focused a little bit more on operational excellence. We worked through some inventory that was high cost. We focused on appropriate SG&A growth and appropriate R&D investments. And we delivered 23% operating income in the quarter and 27% net income in the quarter on 7% top line growth to just north of $4.5 billion over the trailing 12 months.
That is incredibly impressive. And I imagine you, because you've helped me on some health issues, that you have encountered a level of lack of awareness, even among practitioners. How many days in med school do they teach this incredibly important topic of sleep?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I talk about all the financial numbers. You know, we helped 174 million people the last 12 months to sleep better, breathe better. But out of 2.5 billion, that's a lot. There is not enough education. And look, we've sponsored some chairs at Harvard and other institutions around the world. Stanford, we work with UC San Diego here, and we sponsor professorships in sleep medicine. But in general primary care physician and GP medicine general training, there's probably less than 2 to 3 days, certainly less than a week spent on the field of sleeping and breathing together. I give guest lectures sometimes at Stanford and other places, and students come. They want to hear about sleeping because it's a third of our lives. They want to hear about breathing because without it, you die in minutes. But it is a fundamental element for human health, and it is under-recognized. And ResMed's job, partnering with some of these mega trends in big pharma and big consumer tech, I think we've got an opportunity of a lifetime to drive awareness in our category.
Now, Mick, there were people who felt that GLP-1 would spell the death of you, but you've got data which indicates actually, let's just say, quite the opposite.
Absolutely quite the opposite. And I was here 90 days ago, and Jim, we've got more numbers. The MIT nerd has got more numbers for you. N equals 660,000 subjects now in the study. 10.5% higher propensity to start CPAP for the patients with a prescription for a GLP-1. 310 basis points higher resupply rate at 12 months, and 500% higher basis points higher at 2 years. So what we're seeing is more of what we talked about last quarter. I'm glad the market is catching up with you and me, but these GLP-1s aren't a headwind to our business. They're a tailwind. They're bringing people into the healthcare system, and then the doctor's saying, wow, you have sleep and breathing issues. We need to diagnose this. We need to treat it. They're motivated. They start CPAP. They stay on it. And these patients are doing incredibly well. And that's just going to continue to grow, and it's going to bring more patients into the funnel for many chronic diseases, but especially sleep apnea, COPD.
Okay, so I wake up this morning. I see Royal Philips up 37%, and I say, oh, my, they must have something besides the a settlement of the lawsuits. Maybe they're being back in here, FDA approval. No, it was just a settlement. It should not have hurt your stock.
Yeah, look, I mean, today we were up 18.9% on Friday. Right. Today, settled down a little bit. The way I look at it is, you know, that competitor has had some significant issues. They're back in many of the markets in Europe and Asia. And we were beating that competitor from 2010 all the way through 2020 in 140 countries that we operate in. They're back in most of them. One of them, they are not yet. But where they're back, they start with 0% new patient share, and they have to compete with the tier three, tier two players and earn their way back in. I'm confident that we will continue to beat them because we've got the smallest, the quietest, the most comfortable, the most connected, and the most intelligent systems out there. And more than that, we've created an ecosystem with 18 billion nights of medical data in the cloud. So we're unlocking the power of those data with ML, AI, generative AI, and we're lowering costs for the healthcare system, improving health for the patients, and empowering doctors with the power of health. And we're empowering patients with an app. 7.8 million of them have MyAir, and they get their own data. They know how they slept and how they were breathing all night, every day.
Well, I wanted to ask you, the wearables have helped too, the megatrend of wearables. That's put people in.
Absolutely, Jim. I think this might be, you know, if you add up the two big GLP-1 players, it's about $1.1 trillion worth of capital. That's pretty big,
yes,
right? Novo and Lilly. But if you add up just one of the big tech players that's in our field now, look at Samsung. They got an FDA de novo clearance on their Galaxy Watch for sleep apnea detection. Look at Apple, right? Another little $2 trillion company. They have the Apple Watch with oximetry, and I think they'll settle that lawsuit with one of my medtech peers and hopefully, you know, respect IP, pay an appropriate, right, you know, settlement there. But let's see what that looks like. They're going to have the ability with that oximetry, they're going to have the ability to do the same thing and detect sleep apnea. Google, another $1 trillion-plus company, they own Fitbit.
Right.
And Fitbit has not only sleep, it has sleep architecture. And they will be able to detect sleep problems and breathing problems. So you add that up, you're talking about $5 trillion worth of capital. Then Whoop and Oura Ring. There's so many wearables that are going to help people understand the 33% of their lives that they should be asleep. Are they breathing right? And if they're not, indicate to them they have risky breathing and then send them into the healthcare system. And then a company like ResMed has to be the digital sleep health concierge to capture
that
sleep-concerned consumer and help them find a path to screening, diagnosis, treatment, and ongoing management for life.
I got to tell you, Mick, I like that very much. It is great to have you on the show. Mick Farrell, Chairman and CEO of ResMed RMD. That was really good.
Thanks, Jim. Great to talk to you.
Talk to you soon. Man Buddy's back after the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast-fire lightning round is next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skeet? That's over the lightning round, Chris. Let's go to Jeffrey in New York. Jeffrey.
Hey, Jim. Thank you so much for all your advice you give.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Of course. Just was calling in about CGC, Canopy Growth.
Okay, that is the best of the pot stocks. So understand, cannabis is actually a big piece of it is owned by STZ, which my Chapel Trust owns. We don't think it's worth all that much, but we do think it's the best of that lot. Let's go to Sam in Colorado. Sam.
Jim, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm all right, Jim. You know, I got an interesting company for you tonight. You know, genomic sequencing is one of the things that I think is going to be a really important part of our healthcare system moving forward as healthcare becomes more personalized. I think genomic sequencing and DNA analysis is an important area to watch.
I agree.
One of the companies that I've been paying attention to is the market leader in the space, and that's Illumina.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting you mentioned. Illumina is a good company, but it's not well run. That's why I've been recommending Danaher, which is better run. Doesn't necessarily have the same kind of science because that's a gene sequencer. But I don't want to own a company that's poorly run because then the stock gets hurt. Let's go to Jimmy in Georgia. Jimmy.
Hello. How you doing? Yeah.
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good. I'm just in Georgia. I was going to ask you about Bank of America. I saw they were on a
very inexpensive stock, probably the less, well, it's more expensive than Citi. But I've got to tell you, I do prefer other banks. I don't think that, I think it's of the big ones, I don't, it's not my favorite. Let's put it that way. Let's go to Norma in New Jersey. Norma.
Yay, hi, Jim. I appreciate you sharing your market wisdom and your very caring advice. BP, Dynatrace. $5 hold.
Very expensive stock, and I'm not going to recommend it. I can't understand why it's so hot. Let's go to John in Pennsylvania. John.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, John.
It's a fast-growing home health services company that went public in January. Its share price fell off quite a bit post-IPO, but recovered strongly after some insider purchases. It's trading at a below-market forward P multiple of 14, despite its strong growth. 11 of the 11 analysts covering the stock rated a buy. Has a massive 27% short position, and I can't for the life of me figure out why. I'd like your thoughts on ticker BTSG, BrightSpring Health Services.
I am surprised at that short position, too. I've got to find out what's the matter before I just bless it, because everything you said is true, and I really happen to like the industry very much. But that position, that short position is too big for me to just say, I'd buy that stock. Someone may know something that I don't. Let's go to Rich in California. Rich.
Hey, Jim, in San Diego, we need more of you and David on Squawk in the morning.
Oh, I'll do my best. I'll do my best to make that happen. What's going on?
Awesome. Nothing much, man. Shout out to my cousin, my wife, Anita, my son, Connor, the Barnes firm, my family from coast to coast, baby. Jim, this stock has doubled since February of 22, but it seems to be just getting started, my man. Buy, sell, hold. BWX Technologies.
Look, I'm biased in favor of Nuke. That's one of the reasons, by the way, just so I know, I like GE Vernova is the best way to play it because it's a little difficult. I also like UEC, but I'm with you on it. I'm with you on this stock. Let's go to Sally in Florida. Sally.
Hi, Kramer. I'm a biggest fan. Watch your show.
Thank you.
So, yeah, so my question is, I'm trying to invest in cybersecurity.
Okay.
And I'm choosing between Palo Alto and CrowdStrike.
All right, very hard. CrowdStrike is really fabulous, but Morgan Stanley put out this incrementally more bullish was the name of the piece today about Palo Alto, and I thought it was exceptional. Gave me a bunch of reasons why Palo Alto, big position in my trust. We bought some when it got hit. I would be a buyer of Palo Alto right here, right now. Mitchell in Arizona. Mitchell. Mitchell. You're up, Mitchell. All right. Let's go. Oh, and that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, find out why Alphabet is getting an A, Google best quarter of the year, and stick with Kramer.
Last week, Alphabet astounded us with what I'm calling the best quarter of the year. While the $70 billion buyback, new 20-cent dividend got a lot of attention. They're not the main reasons why the stock, which includes Google, caught fire. No, it was all about Alphabet's incredibly thoughtful conference call with more information and transparency than we've ever seen from this Alphabet. Just as important, that information was very positive, and it's why I think the stock can keep running. Why I think the decline today was a good opportunity to buy. First, Alphabet talked about its own artificial intelligence programs and how they're superior to everyone else's. Normally, I take it with a grain of salt, but when you go through the call, it's clear they have an edge on the competition. Plus, the AI spending isn't killing their bottom line, even as AI accounted for more than half of Alphabet's capital expenditures, which, with much of that, I believe, to be with NVIDIA chips. Unlike Meta platforms, nobody cared about the spending because Alphabet's other businesses are doing so much better. First, the obvious, the 16% revenue growth with 400 basis points of margin expansion, which gave you $1.74 of earnings per share. That's a whopping 15% above what Wall Street was expecting for this gigantic company. Many, including yours truly, were concerned about how generative AI could actually hurt Google Search. That's the company's bread and butter. After listening to the call, I came away thinking, wait a second, it actually helps search, which of course then helps advertising. This is the kind of transparency I've longed for, and they're giving it to us. Some of that transparency allowed us to see the good things that are happening at Google Cloud. They've announced over 1,000 new products and features in just the last 8 months. In fact, more than 300 customers and partners are united in their endorsement of generative AI success with Google Cloud, including Mercedes-Benz, Cintas, you know, I love those guys, and Walmart, all huge accounts. They claim the cloud business is viewed as the leader in cybersecurity. The cybersecurity experts are using Alphabet's Gemini AI for help. I can't disagree with that. As for search, it beat buy-side expectations by 100 to 160 basis points, growing at 14%, and then the company told us the cadence, which is very good. We now know that viewers are collectively watching a billion hours of YouTube each day, and ad revenues there were up 21%, cloud's up 28%. If you grouped YouTube and cloud together, these growth businesses would exit the year at a phenomenal $100 billion run rate with fantastic margins.
Bye, bye, bye.
As Alphabet President Ruth Porat stated, YouTube has become the leader in the U.S. streaming watch time for the last 12 months. Lots of good brands. For example, to help McDonald's, which is going to report soon, build the restaurant of the future, they're deepening their partnership across Google Cloud. I love that kind of detail. It's fantastic. Operating expenses were 21.4 billion. Those were down 2%. Great sign of expense control. There were $760 million in employee severance this quarter. Clearly, Alphabet's gotten religion on efficiency. There's way more detail than I can describe here, but chew on this. The company's increasing its capital spending to about $50 billion this year, according to J.P. Morgan. That would represent a bigger increase in CapEx estimates than Meta's, and Meta's stock got killed by CapEx worries. But with Alphabet, the profitability and transparency gave us comfort that the AI payoff will be immediate, and they clearly needed to spend a lot just to meet new customer demand. We always want companies to spend more money to keep their customers happy, for heaven's sake. This whole conference was what I call a masterclass of transparency and health. It made me feel great that we owned this one for the Charitable Trust. It was truly glorious, and if this member of the Magnificent Seven pulls back big, you know what? It's pretty easy.
Bye, bye, bye!
I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.